Huh? Mr. Chairman, Bob Andrews, representing PERS.
Where were you last Saturday?
I was at my desk, sir.
He'd like to go
that
back.
Was a disservice to the PERS committee. We're glad you're here. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. What we're looking for here is to decouple the computation of benefits as a disabled police and firefighter with any subsequent service that might be performed as other than a police officer or firefighter that would be covered as
subsequent. Not prior.
Not prior, sir.
So, in other words... All right, go ahead.
This service credit earned in the system upon employment as provided in this subsection. And this subsection has to do with being reemployed as other than a police officer or firefighter when you're already receiving the disability.
So they can't add the disability by subsequent...
That would be correct, but it has nothing to do with
employment as a public employee.
Subsequent to the disability.
All right. Is that it? Thanks, Bob. Go ahead, Max.
All right. Then in line 38, delete 4 and insert 3. That's just a change. Line 38. Oh, okay. It's a referencing that we already took that 4 out. At one time, you'll note on lines 29 through 35, at one time the, in fact, I think Mr. Andrews or Mr. McDonald was concerned about the disability benefits and the amount of monthly disability benefits shall be reduced by the amount. And they at one time talked about changing that to annual to make it easier. But as I understand it, they have since then decided that they can deal with that section on a monthly basis.
I remember that very well.
And do not need to have it changed.
Previous comments pertaining to annual adjustments no longer apply. PERS is formalizing provisions to monitor wages paid when drawing a disability benefit on a monthly basis. Thus, there is no need to amend language in Section 2, Page 3, Lines 29 through 35, complications arise when a benefit is canceled. Monthly adjustments are easy to handle for both PERS and the member. So we're better off the way we are.
That's correct. That's
than
why,
the way we discussed.
And that's why we haven't changed it.
All right. Any further amendments to this thing other than dash one that you have on hand?
No.
This is the only amendment?
That's the only one I know of.
Mr. Chair, if you remember rightly, I sat down with the interested parties and tried to work out the concerns we had after the last committee meeting. This was the amendments we put together. I'm not going to say that we walked away with unanimous consent about the bill, but as far as we were concerned, I think we walked away with the best that we're going to walk away with. I mean, that was the sentiment that I got from our little work group.
The administrative costs to PERS are a 2.44 FTE. And have you ever seen a 0.44 FTE? PERS administrative costs, $141,089.91, $173,091.93. Employer costs of state and local as a percent of payroll of covered employees. So this, it would increase the percent of payroll of covered employees about 0.6 of 1%, a little over half. We don't know how much money that would be, just an estimate on the employer's share, which is in the 10.5 range or somewhere in there. Or for police and fire, it's probably higher. Bob, for police and fire, it's higher than 10.5, the employer's rate. Sorry.
Forced him to go to another file.
It's in another file, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you brought your office with us, so you don't need to be sitting up at your desk.
Yeah, I don't need the office anymore. You're right, sir. Let me pick it out of here. For state agencies, Mr. Chair, as an example, the uniformed personnel or police and firefighters, the employer contribution rate, if they were singled out, would be 16.22%.
As opposed to
10.2, which is an aggregate rate that we apply across all agencies.
Is the aggregate rate to be applied across all agencies include the police and fire rate?
Yes, sir.
That's what I thought. So the 10.2 includes police and fire as as an aggregate weight across all systems, but when isolated, police and fire are 16 point, what did you say?
8.9, sir.
16, okay, almost 17%.
16.22, sir.
16.22, 16%, a little over.
This would add 6/10 of a
percent. 6/10 of a percent to
16.22
or 10.2.
If I may, sir, it'd be 0.6 of the payroll, 0.6% of the payroll.
That's the rate, 10.2 rate.
Well, no. Of a payroll, say there's a payroll of $600 million, it would be 0.6 of that.
What's the 10.2?
That's 10.2% of the payroll, sir.
So it isn't.
It's not a 0.6 increase in the employer rate. It's a
I understand. Yeah. You're looking at a 10.8.
No.
It's 0.6 times 10.2?
It'd be 0.6% of what we estimate the covered payroll that that individuals would be applicable for this benefit.
Oh. Different. Different base.
Right. We're estimating that it, from the actuarial report that we had earlier.
You're looking at 6.82.
About $600,000 for increase per year for state, and about $333,000 per year for local government.
Chair, I'd move the dash one amendment.
Representative Dominey moves the dash one amendments. Any objection to dash one?
Can we have some discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Discussion.
Thank you.
Well, on the dash one or the bill?
Dash one amendment. Doesn't that effectively remove any incentive to get injured workers back to work?
Well, you're talking about 43, line 43 and 44 on the bottom of page 2 and pages 1 through 8, lines 1 through 8 at the top of page 3.
The, Mr. Chair, the incentive to get people back to work is essentially on lines 21 through 42 on page 3. That's the, if they get back to work, their disability is reduced by a certain amount. What the dash one amendments do by taking out lines 43 and 44 of page 2 and the top part of page 3 is take out the board's responsibility to decide whether or not that person who is on disability has refused suitable work. And that's, you know, the carrot is still there as far as I can see, as far as reemployment. The problem, the language that was a problem last time has been taken out, the suitable work and who's to charge, decide that and those kinds of things. That's what's taken out. But I think the incentive is still there to do it.
But the work for which qualified is still in on page.
That's correct.
39 of page 2. All right. Is there any objection to dash one? Dash one is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 2569.
Representative Dominey moves House Bill 2569 as amended.
I might say before you get far into that vote that this does not, for some reason, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And if what I'm hearing from Mr. Andrews, and we have an administrative cost of $141,000 and some costs of to the state and locals of the extent that he's talking about, I would suggest that maybe
we recommend
to the full committee that this be sent to Ways and Means.
I would so move. Representative Dominey moves House Bill 2569 as amended to the full labor committee with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
if if between now and the time that it gets to full committee, we get the fiscal impact, and it does not reflect that large of a number, what does it take?
It's already there. We've passed the amount that it takes already to get it to Ways and Means.
What is that amount?
What is it?
Well, $50,000 is sort of the watermark that they've been doing.
The watermark.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're over the watermark.
I'm not in charge of those policy decisions.
All right, Shannon, will you call the roll, please, if there's no further discussion?
No.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Sam, will you take this for a minute? I got to run for a second. I'll be right back. We'll go to 2841.
Go ahead.
2841.
Public hearing.
Public hearing on 2841.
Be right back.
That somebody's got a fancy handprint, but Alou Bradbert. You come up and you're listed as four. You get to start doing the explaining on the bill. You get the first shot.
Why don't you let me
assist you? Mr. Chairman, if the chair pleases, I'd like to make a suggestion to save some time. We have three others who are going to be testifying for this bill. Mr. Pierce, Mr. Frederickson, and Mrs. Hawes. I would ask the chair if they could come up and join this group and stay.
Feel free to do so. Feel free to do so. I guess everybody that was signed up except for Bob. We're getting used to his face by now.
Are these same? Well, he didn't give us enough. So, okay, great. Thank you.
Make sure that for the record you give your name before you, who you represent or something about yourself for the record.
Are we ready to go?
We sure are.
Okay. My name is Louis Broadbent. I represent workers at the closed custody system of juvenile corrections. I work at McLaren School. One of our concerns, first, I guess we need to thank this committee, especially since I know that there was a special effort to get this hearing in, and we do appreciate that. And I know the chairman worked hard on this to get this session in, and we want it to be known to him especially. We're requesting policeman fireman retirement protection for the workers in the juvenile closed custody system. The reason we are requesting this protection is that these workers have experienced and are experiencing a high rate of injury and are working under a great high-risk situation for injuries. Just a little bit of history. 1983, there was some downsizing at the juvenile institutions, as some of you remember. And as a result of this, I think that we began seeing a different type of student being housed in the institutions and in the close custody system. The difference of the students in 1983 and 1989 is compared to the person-to-person crimes have increased 150%. Now that means that most of the students that we receive at these institutions and in the closed custody system are those with aggressive behavior who are difficult to control physically as well as to deliver treatment to. To back this up, we looked up some facts and figures about the number of times at McLaren, for example, that we have had to physically control a student, that is, where one or two staff have had to control a student, perhaps on the floor, but control him and hold him to keep from hurting others or hurting himself. There have been more than 250 incidents per year on this. Now, I have the figures for the first 4 months of this year. We are over 150 incidents, physical altercations with students at McLaren alone. I think that you could add another 30% for Hillcrest and the rest of the closed custody system, and you would probably get a fairly good, close figure as to how many physical situations that staff are involved in. And one, some of the material that we have sent out, we have shown that staff have been off injuries, off work injuries of 69 at McLaren in 1987, and there were 50 of these injuries in 1988, and I don't know what the rate is this year, it is down somewhat, but we still have the high incident rate and high risk. I would like to have our other staff members here who are working as GLCs or teacher or counselor in this system to share some of their experience. And I'd like to ask Jim Fredrickson to share in answering the question, why is it, are these injury rates so high? Why do we need this protection?
My name is James Fredrickson and I work at McLaren School. I'm a GLC3 assistant manager of a cottage. There are several factors I think involved in the change of injury rate. The downsizing is certainly one of them. A more compressed, violent population is another part of that. I think the gang situation is a major part of that at this time. We have 100 gang members or gang-identified kids in the system now. In my unit, for instance, I have Bloods, Crips, and Skinheads, all three housed in the same unit. When you're doing treatment and confronting treatment issues, especially between the skinhead type oriented kids and the black gangs, there's a potential for a lot of explosive feelings and confrontations, as well as the treatment process being very confrontive to deal with the thinking patterns that these kids use to allow themselves to do their violence. This again creates a lot of stress, and their normal way of dealing with that kind of experience is to become angry and violent. That's their method of dealing with that kind of violence. The type of individual that we get in our closed custody system are those kinds of kids who have shown a real high propensity of that kind of violent, aggressive, explosive behavior. One other difference in discussing with people who I know at OSCI and OSP, those clients, as they get older, they learn, hey, there's some real serious consequences for this kind of behavior. In the juvenile system, because of court actions, that consequence doesn't exist. In OSCI, for instance, if someone attacks a staff, they can look at least 1 to possibly 2 years in some kind of segregation situation. The juvenile looks at 1 or 2 days.
I'd like to ask you a question. You're covered by workers' compensation.
Yes, we are.
What's your rate compared to police and fire? You know? Anybody know?
I can tell you this, that in 1987, we had more staff injuries, workman comp injuries, at McLaren directly related to client violence than OSCI and OSP did combined. They serve a population of almost 3,000 clients. They had 60 injuries in 1987. We had 61. We serve a client population of approximately 200.
It would seem to me
so it's considerably higher.
It would seem to me that if you could show that your workers' compensation rate is equal to or close to or more than that of the statewide average on police, so we'd have a real concrete piece of evidence to deal with.
Our best information indicates that we're almost 10 times as high as they are.
Mr. Chairman, we are an agency, but we are an agency that we're on the Dirty Dozen of the state agencies that had the highest injury rate, and we made the top five. Now, we're not very proud of that, but it hurts us.
Does that include state police?
Yes.
It includes the state agencies.
Where do you rank on state police, the state police?
State police is not in the top 12, and we don't have the ranking for anybody above the top 12. And we were number five.
We were number five out of the top five.
Mr. Chair, maybe you could answer, where can we get this ranking? Can you provide that to the committee?
I'm sure we can provide that.
Boy, I would certainly, that's evidence that you've got that is so, that makes your case.
Well, we believe it does, yes. We believe it does, because it's 50% of all the injuries that occurred at McLaren in the years that we're talking about had to do with the control, the physical control of students. So it's not just, you know, we're not talking about injuries lifting or falling over or tripping, we're talking about injuries in altercations.
We're ready to move the bill. You want to just let us move the bill?
We'd be happy to.
We're more than willing to allow you to.
We'd be happy to.
Well, I'd like to have, what I'd like, the reason I want to move the bill now and stop your testimony at this point is because it isn't going to make any difference what you say from here on out, not to Representative Domney and I. But what I want you to do is to do this, get the information that you don't have on the numbers you were just talking about and your ranking, and see if you can't get New Oregon State Police or Salem or any other workers' comp rates and compare that with your workers' comp rates and see how that shakes down. Now, if it doesn't shake down very good, you don't have to bring it before the full labor committee, but I'm just giving you some advice on what evidence would probably move the committee. I believe you, and Representative Domney believes you without seeing those numbers, but we're going to move the bill. We're in work session on 2841.
Mr. Chair, I'd move it.
Pardon? I can't wait for him. I got an appointment with, you move the bill, 2841, no amendments?
No amendments.
No discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Domney.
We might, because Bob Andrews was on the list, we might allow him to say something before we move the bill.
That's right, he's on the list. Do you want to talk to us, Bob? We'll make some room, and thank you very much.
You can have my chair, Bob.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you for getting us a hearing on this bill. We appreciate this very much.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off, but there's no need for you to talk yourself out of something.
I want to reiterate our great appreciation of your time and your efforts in helping us get here.
Well, we just weren't aware of the situation.
Mr. Chair, the reason I called him up was if he had some...
Yeah, Bob, I didn't even see you were here. You told me everybody was there. I didn't realize it was you.
He may have a glitch in the bill that we need to...
All right, Bob, what's wrong with it?
Mr. Chairman, Bob Andrews, PERS, manager of our membership and coverage section. No problem with the bill. There was a concern that I had that you may not have had a fiscal impact statement on it.
They have a fiscal in front of them.
You do have a fiscal, okay. That was a concern that I had, and that was the only thing that I had to, that I wanted to make sure the committee had available.
I have some concerns about it.
You asked a question.
All right. Mr. Andrews, we have a fiscal, preliminary fiscal impact statement from legislative fiscal. They say that the analysis is prepared without agency input. I'm not sure what agency they're talking about, whether they're talking about PERS agency or the agencies involved with the members that are applying here. They do say that CSD indicates that total payroll of potentially affected employees is around 21 million, and the cost would be 6.3% of the payroll of affected employees. So I'm assuming that based on that figure, that the $1.33 million is an accurate figure, I mean, close to accurate. Are those the figures you're talking about?
The assumptions we would have to, Mr. Chairman, the assumptions that Children's Services Division is offering, we would have to accept the payroll factor that they're using of 6.4 or 3.4 is a good factor.
Well,
remembering, of course, Mr. Chairman, that that is spread across all agencies. We want, as we understand that, as an aggregate. But that, those assumptions should be, if they're correct from CSD, we would accept those.
Thank you.
Representative Domney, we have a motion to move the bill. The testimony is from the people that were here from McLaren that they are in the top five of the injury rates in the state, and the Oregon State Police is not even in the top 12, gives us reason to move the bill to the full committee. The facts are that they don't have written evidence to support their contention, and I ask for comparative workers' comp rates between McLaren School for Boys and the Oregon State Police. It would give us some evidence that they belong in that category. That information they also don't have. So Representative Domini has moved the bill, and it looks like we're going to have a sub to Ways and Means, Max.
This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, to a sub with Ways and Means, and that'll give them, rather than, we can't, we're not going to have any more meetings. And because the chairman wants to close her down, and the speaker has said, close her down, so we're closing her down. That would give them an opportunity to get their material before the full committee, should the chairman decide to hear the bill and give us, you know, a further justification for moving the bill out of later with that information.
Chairman, what was the motion to full committee? Do pass?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend the motion and the full committee without it.
No, I want to keep the recommendation of the past. I think because of what we're hearing about the impact, I think it should go with the recommendation.
The maker of the motion would rather have a do pass, so we're going to vote on do pass. Would you, is there any further? Shannon, call the roll.
Aye.
Nope.
All right, House Bill 2841 has been moved to the Labor Committee with a do pass recommendation to Ways and Means, sub to Ways and Means. We will close the work session on that bill and go into work session on 2842.
I'm going to go get 43. I guess I just thought I need to look at it too.
Is the bill that deals with mental health division, and we have to recall, I'm going to call Bruce Adams, Chuck Forward, and Roger Evans. Thank God you people write your names so that the chairman can read it. You ought to see what some people put down on these lists. I mean, it's just one line of nothing. You can't read a thing. So if you'll come up together. Oh, wait. Unless Roger wants to wait and just have Bruce and Chuck up. Is that all right?
Wait, yes.
All right.
We'd like to bring Dan Reichman up.
Sure.
Right.
And before you start to testify, be sure and give us your name so that it's on the record.
Go ahead.
I'm going to cut you off.
Okay, fine. Go.
Okay, my name is Dan Reichman, work at Oregon State Hospital in the forensic unit. My left is Chuck Forward, who works at Oregon State Hospital in the Maple unit.
In the child and adolescent,
unit, excuse me, just moved. And on the end is Bruce Adams, who has a major portion of the presentation of facts, sort of, or opinions. Also works a forensic unit of OSH. Our key issues here, the same as many other people, is an injury rate that is extremely high. I'm not sure. Bruce will have some numbers. We will have to get some of the same information that I'm sure McLaren will. The other factors that affect OSH to a large degree is that many of our departments deal directly with convicted felons or mentally ill offenders who, other than their mental illness, would have been convicted.
So you're dealing with these people that were convicted and doomed to...
Guilty, but not responsible.
Maybe doomed is the right word. I think it is the right word. Deemed to be insane.
Yes. Guilty, but not responsible.
And sent to you.
And sent to us. We also have convicted felons who were not found to be insane who come to us for treatment.
Please, I hate to put the words on record. I really better not. What can I call bleeding hearts other than bleeding hearts, right?
We call them earth muffins.
Okay, well, maybe that's good. What do you deal with in the way that you can... what are your restrictions out there in the way you can deal with these...
Restrictions are much greater than they are in corrections.
About ACLU and whoever else, you know, governs that.
Corrections has one type of training for dealing with violence. We have greater restrictions. I'm the trainer for preventing and managing aggressive behavior and employee response to violent situations. We have very, very strong restrictions on what kind of physical maneuvers that we can use, what kind of holds that we can use. If any of those are broken, we're put on suspension immediately and investigated. An example is the police and firemen, or the police and corrections are taught hair holds, which are very, very effective in controlling a violent person. We're not allowed to use any hair holds at all. Mental health is much more restrictive than...
Can you bend back a finger? Or?
Absolutely not. No pressure point holds.
If someone were to use such a hold,